How would you describe Jesus? Hello, I'm Dave Thomas, and this is The Good Word, a weekly conversation about biblical themes produced by the School of Theology here at Walla Walla University. Some of you may notice that we are now a university, whereas if you've been listening regularly, you heard us as a college, but there has come a transition. And while I'm talking about transitions, you might want to know that The Good Word used to be called Probe. But for a number of reasons, we have now called it The Good Word, and I welcome you to our conversation. My conversation partners today are Larry Vavurka and Daryl Bigger, both longtime colleagues in the School of Theology. Thank you for being here, gentlemen.
You're welcome.
This week, we are beginning our conversation with the observation that when Jesus called his first disciples, and the accounts of that in the Gospels are somewhat different, and maybe we'll come back to that a little bit, because sometimes when reading the Bible, people notice that those records are not exactly the same, and they are surprised by it and perhaps don't know what to do with that, but we'll save that for a little while. But when Jesus called his disciples, there are a number of occasions where when he called one of them, for example, when he called Philip, on his way to following Jesus, he found his brother Nathanael and invited him to come. There are several examples in the Gospels of this kind of thing. And I noticed that in every case, the invitation to this other person involved some description of Jesus, that the one who was doing the inviting, who had himself been invited by Jesus, had a description. And I wonder if you, gentlemen, if you were in a position of inviting somebody, how would you go about describing Jesus that would make him attractive to a relative or an acquaintance?
For me, the most overwhelming thing about sensing God's presence is that Jesus knows all the bad things about me, mm-hmm. but he likes me anyway.
Okay.
And that just wins me over.
Okay. So that might be the way you described him to somebody who was... Mm-hmm. Who
also knows all my bad traits.
Oh. Those are well hidden, Daryl. Larry, you want to tangle
that? No, I was thinking along the same line, that I would say I found someone who knows everything about me and who has absolutely, unconditionally forgiven me and has accepted me and wants me to be a friend. And that is incredible.
Sure. We're rushing right to the woman at the well story, aren't we? Where she just couldn't contain herself after Jesus stripped away all of her defense mechanisms. What was the first thing she wanted to do? Rush out and bring her friends.
Yeah. Yeah. And her comment, as I recall it, was very enlightening along these lines, that he told me everything that I have done, or he knows all about.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, there is something about a friend who loves you even though they know you.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that true?
Mm-hmm. True.
In fact, there's no friend like the one who actually knows you and still hangs around.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so. Mm-hmm. Well, that's very inviting. It makes me want to be a Christian, Larry and Daryl. I mentioned a little earlier that if you look at the Gospels and you compare the Gospels, you find that the record of how Jesus called the disciples and who he called first, that they don't all match exactly. And sometimes people are a little troubled by that. We have the expectation that the Gospels should all say almost exactly the same thing. And Matthew and Mark are pretty close, I think. But, when you get to John and even in Luke, there are some variations. Do you gentlemen dare take up this little question here? It troubles some people why these stories are not exactly the same.
Well, I'm not sure how detailed you want to get into pointing out the differences. I suppose folks could probably review that on their own.
Yeah.
But it's the question of how do you deal with these differences, or harmonize, or just accept?
Yeah, that's the question.
The differences. It seems that the different authors had different agendas at times in telling the stories. there seems to be a big thing made of the call that was extended at the conclusion of the miraculous draught of fish,
mm-hmm.
which seems to be a different sort of thing from the follow me invitation that was issued to disciples as Jesus initially met them shortly after his baptism and working within the circle of John's followers. That one, and that's identified as Jesus calling the disciples. He was calling them to be fishers of men. He was really, was an invitation to be pastors or to the ministry.
Mm-hmm.
So one way of understanding that is what's paramount in the mind of the author, which is he seeing as being the primary, most important point of contact that has the greatest impact upon him. Certainly the invitation to be fishers of men, that miracle just really, that took Peter apart at the seams. Whereas others like Nathaniel, Jesus confronting him with the sort of character description that he did brought him unglued in some ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's just an amazing comment, yeah. isn't it, yeah. that, that Jesus made there.
Mm-hmm. The fishing story has always fascinated me because it makes the miracle makes absolutely no sense. None. And to think about floating underwater underneath a boat and moving just a few feet and having huge numbers of fish is just illogical. And to have Peter so impressed with that is the point of the story, no doubt about it. So part of those differences intrigues me as a reader to try to see what the author's point was in this particular case. I know that when I tell the same story in different settings to different people, I'll emphasize one point over another because it seems to me to fit. Mm-hmm. In that setting, mm-hmm. more. Well, I'm not troubled by those things at all. It's a part of the richness of what can be found there, I think.
So actually, it's helpful for us to realize that the people who wrote the Gospels were not trying to write a harmony of the Gospels. They were trying to write the story about Jesus from a particular perspective that gave them urgency.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so in a way, we might say it's like if the three of us saw an accident from different places, it's unlikely that we would write exactly the same thing, although the story that would emerge would be nuanced in different ways, but the story would be essentially the same.
Yeah. And it intrigues me to realize, too, that the geography of that area is confined enough that even though transportation and communication wasn't as intense as it is now, it still is more than likely that these people had more than this initial encounter with Jesus. They had been hearing about him and visiting with him and listening to what he had to say. So each of these dramatic invitations to which they finally respond is probably the culmination of a number of other contacts, and this is the one that crystallizes their decision.
Yeah. I want to bring up another issue that has intrigued me a lot. In Matthew 9 and Mark 2 and Luke 5, in all those chapters we read the same story of Jesus calling Levi Matthew. And Levi Matthew was a tax collector. And in most cases, as we know, tax collectors were viewed as traitors because they were natives of the particular colony in which they lived under Roman government, but they had sold out to collect taxes for the hated occupier. And there was no hindrance to them overcharging tax money and therefore getting wealthy. And as one who pays taxes, I can tell you I wouldn't be very happy if I was under that circumstance. And, of course, in Jesus' day, the average citizen had no recourse. And so, you know, here Jesus is going along with his followers, and here, lo and behold, sits Levi Matthew at the taxing booth, and Jesus invites him to become a disciple. Now, what's going on here? How do you think this played with the other disciples? What is Jesus doing here by inviting this renegade to become a disciple, or this traitor?
I'd like to know a lot more about Matthew. It intrigues me. Maybe there were some characteristics about him that were different from the other tax collectors. That's one possibility. And another possibility is that Matthew just may have been the pragmatist, the super pragmatist of the crowd. And instead of being an idealistic Jew who was going to maintain his separate identity, Matthew says, listen, somebody's going to be doing this. It might as well be me. I'm going to do it better than everybody else.
Oh, boy. Yeah, so that could work into discipleship. Huh? Mm-hmm. Larry, you want to tangle with that?
Well, I'm, again, intrigued by Matthew. And Matthew's influence is in Antioch, and Antioch is the place from whence we get the Gospel of Matthew. And the kind of Christian community that was created there is the kind that's reflected in Matthew 18.
Mm-hmm.
And that is one that has a great deal of fairness, of pastoral shepherd heart concern for the welfare, well-being of people and the fair treatment of people. If somehow Jesus knew this about Matthew, intuitively knew this through the Spirit's guidance, again, Jesus specifically calls this person to be one of his 12 closest followers, who he's grooming for the leadership of the church of the future. That has to be divinely ordained and understood, it seems to me. It's that special calling. Because I do see Jesus calling a whole lot of scoundrels, as we would call them, and he has a special ministry to them.
I wonder how the disciples who had already associated with Jesus, how they took in. It's very clear that the calling that Jesus extends does create a community. You mentioned that a couple of weeks ago, Daryl, that thought has stuck in my mind along the way, that discipleship involves gathering together into communities. And here, this community, which was very small, finds a way to take in the renegade. And I wonder how Christian communities, how our churches, for example, how well we do at making room for renegades. And I suppose if they have grand conversion stories, that it's easier to take them in, but there still has to be a way.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, we leave you to contemplate this. I wonder, for example, what priorities we would need to adjust in our lives to enable us to portray a picture of Jesus that makes him attractive to others, and then to order our lives in such a way that we take in those who hear and respond, some of whom are likely to be renegades. Thank you, gentlemen, Larry and Daryl, for your participation today. Our thanks to engineer John Campbell. And to you, our audience, we thank you for listening faithfully. For the Good Word, I'm Dave Thomas.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.